Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and a major life crisis can lead some to question their faith and wonder, why me? For a New York City writer, the diagnosis of his infant son with a life-threatening disease led him back to his half-forgotten Southern Baptist roots. During his darkest days, Hamilton Cain found himself calmed by the familiar traditions he had virtually abandoned, yet still conflicted by his conservative childhood faith and his more recent secular Brooklyn life. In his new book, The Boy's Faith, Notes from a Southern Baptist Upbringing, Cain takes us on his spiritual journey to rediscover the values of his upbringing. And Hamilton Cain is here with us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Brian. Nice to see you.
And listeners, we're opening the phones for you on this. Have you found yourself questioning your faith during some of life's more trying moments, or maybe some of life's events, good or bad, have brought you closer to a faith that you had previously drifted from? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. In the book, Hamilton, you describe yourself as a Baptist boy prodigy in Tennessee. Describe to us how you were brought up.
Well, I was someone who really was deeply immersed in the church. The church was this very structured environment for me and for my family. And in many respects, it felt like all things to us. I was at services three times a week. I went to elementary school at my church. So quite often I was there 6 and 7 days a week. And it really gave me a template for community and a template for a value system that to some degree I felt I grew out of. But then when my son was born in 2002 and sort of instantly the doctors knew there was something very wrong with him, and he was hospitalized here in New York for 7 months. It was such a devastating experience. It was my wife and I, our first child. And we really both were scrambling to try to, find things in our own character to help us deal with it. And as any family who has experience with this particular disease, which is called spinal muscular atrophy, or SMA, it's very, very medically it's a very medically intensive disease, and it's the number one genetic killer of children under the age of 2. So we were facing the possibility that he wouldn't live very long. We were facing the possibility that he was clearly struggling medically. Like I said, he was in the hospital for about 7 months. And during that time, exhausted, demoralized, I started to look back to the past and to what could really help me help him. And there was the book opens with a pretty difficult passage with my parents when they come to visit me here in New York from Tennessee. And, it was kind of a misfire all the way around. And there was, miscommunication on both sides. I was really expecting them to kind of roll up their sleeves and jump in. I don't think they grasped the gravity of the situation. I think on some level it was really scary for them. Mm-hmm. And so, for a long time, I really held on to a lot of anger about that. And then once I started to write about it, I really wanted to move past the anger and try to reconnect with not only the culture, but also with my parents.
What was it about the religion that you most felt you had outgrown and left behind? And what was it about the religion that you came back to?
Well, I think, the sense of a kind of script for how you live your life on a daily basis was something that I hadn't really felt need for in all my years here in New York. But what I came back to was a sense of values. And when I was writing the book, I originally thought I would write a kind of Southern Baptist childhood, the way that Frank McCourt wrote about his Irish Catholic childhood in Angela's Ashes, or Sholom Oslander writing about his Orthodox Jewish background in Foreskin's Lament, and Rhoda Jansen in about her religious upbringing in Mennonite and a Little Black Dress. These are all three books that have been very influential. That's why I mentioned them. And that's sort of what I thought I would do. And pretty late in the process, actually, I realized that there was a larger story that was there under the surface that was coming out. It was a story about values and about the way that I have been a better parent to my son, and to all three of my sons, actually, has a lot to do with structure and discipline and, in some senses, self-sacrifice. And that really traces right back to my Baptist childhood in Tennessee.
A question that I'm sure many listeners are wondering, because most New Yorkers' casual impression of the Southern Baptist religion is that it's maybe the most retrograde, reactionary, conservative branch of Christianity in the United States that says a wife is to submit herself to the, her husband as the church submits to the headship of Christ and all that stuff. Was that a conflict for you growing up? Was that an eye-opener for you as you became an adult or moved to Brooklyn that, oh, my God, look what my church actually stands for, and then a conflict as you started to embrace it to help you through the crisis with your child?
Well, certainly, my social views are different from a lot of Southern Baptists. Having said that, I certainly believe that the Baptists are as nuanced people as any people here in the country. And the women that I knew were not particularly submissive. They were very strong-willed, and my mother's a great example of that. She's a woman with terrific drive and energy. She was a school teacher and a wonderful educator, and her life force is something that we've had our difficult moments, but it continues to inspire me. So it's very nuanced. And certainly my sister is another example of a Baptist woman, I think, has just tremendous skills in range of thought. And that's something that I've also come back to through the writing process as well, as I've reconnected not only with the childhood, but also with my family in ways that have brought us together. And in some ways, I had to kind of write through some of the painful stuff to get to a larger sense of our family and wanting to be closer to them again.
Hamilton Cain, my guest on WNYC, author of The Boy's Faith, Notes from a Southern Baptist Upbringing. We have calls coming in from really all over the spectrum in terms of relationship between crisis and religion. Mm-hmm. Is it Aline in West Orange? You're on WNYC. Hello, Aline. Aline, are you there? All right, we'll try to get back to her. How about Rob in the Bronx? Rob, you're on WNYC. No, I guess callers aren't able to hear me, or I'm not able to hear them for some reason, so we'll try to work that out. Your wife is Jewish.
Yes.
She grew up in a very different type of household
than
you did.
Absolutely, right.
How did she react to you returning to your Baptist beliefs?
Well, my wife and I, we've been married for 15 years, and we are wonderfully connected. And make each other laugh constantly. And through some very difficult periods, first with our older son, most obviously with our oldest son, we've really, really, really bonded. And, I think she's it's a bit exotic to her on some level, but she's been incredibly supportive of me writing the book. In some ways, she's pushed me to do more reaching back into the past and more reconnection than I would even do it for myself. She's challenged me to do that in very positive ways. And so while she doesn't always understand it she has a real appreciation for how important it is to me and that's a larger story of families and tradition. I mean, interfaith marriages present their own series of challenges, as we know, and for two people who come from such polar opposite backgrounds. But certainly she's very focused and supportive on how important it was to me and how important it is to reconnect with one's religious upbringing, because the religious childhood does cast a long shadow.
And what happened with your son's illness?
Well, the good news is he is 8.5 years old. He's very medically fragile. His care is constant. It's very physically exhausting and arduous, but he's doing very, very well. We know how to take care of him at home, and we're constantly there with him and some nursing that we have as well, but we don't have full-time nursing. So, being able to really sacrifice my own needs, if like, I don't even get the opportunity to go out for an afternoon for a cup of coffee and go read a book in a cafe. That's very hard for me to do. But again,
on the occasional book tour.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. So the discipline and the sense of self-sacrifice that was very much a strong presence in my church life as a child has served me well today.
Are you raising him to be Southern Baptist
in
any way?
I don't think we're going to do that. But I do think that he will have a strong sense of both of his parents' religious traditions.
Let's try Eileen again in West Orange. Do we have you, Eileen?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Good. Okay. I am I have had three breast cancers over a 26-year period, and I have recently been diagnosed with the, you know, the incurable breast cancer thing.
I'm sorry.
Very sorry.
Thank you. But I've been an atheist probably, I was raised Jewish, and I've been an atheist probably since college. And even when I had my first breast cancer, I was like, oh, you know, the family joke is, thank God I'm an atheist. And I'm very glad of that because I don't have to be sitting around, like, questioning some higher authority or power of why me. Mm. My attitude is, well, why not me? Mm. You know.
And you weren't pulled back to it, to your Jewish roots, for comfort?
No, not at all. I never found any comfort in it, which is why it's more not even my Jewish roots. It's generally my whole questioning of the non-existence of God.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I, you know, celebrate some of the Jewish holidays, but
right. So there's the cultural side, but
culture.
Yes,
but I just find a burden has been lifted off of me by this lack of belief.
Thank you very much for your call, and I appreciate your openness and in your circumstances.
I think a lot of atheists feel that way. I have atheists in my life. I do have a friend who is Jewish, who is an atheist, who after her father passed away, she said Kaddish for a year. And found great comfort in that. So the cells were tickled in ways similar to mine.
Let's go to Jennifer in Glen Rock. Jennifer, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to share an experience that was both painful and reassuring for me, ultimately. When my daughter was about 5 years old, she suffered somewhat is still somewhat of a mystery. She was otherwise a calm child, but started having some types of major breakdowns, and the doctors couldn't quite figure it out, and she ultimately had to be hospitalized for a week. And I was church-going. I, too, had been raised Southern Baptist, but at that time was going to a non-denominational church. But I met with a lot of things that people say when they mean to be comforting, like, oh, you're really strong, that's why God is letting this happen to your daughter. Oh, you're going to have a, she's going to have a great testimony someday.
Doesn't that make you furious?
Yes, it did.
I had some of, Jennifer, I had some of those too, and it can be very frustrating.
Yes, it really, really can.
But,
and I
you wound up going to your faith, Jennifer, right, ultimately?
I did, yes. I remember just talking to God and saying, you know, if you're trying to make an example of me, I don't want any part of it. But ultimately, I really found so my only strength came from just the feeling of God's presence and the feeling of people praying for me. And since that time of my daughter's breakdown, this has happened then, three later times I've gone through, then just 1 year later, the death of my father, who was such a support. Mm. I've gone through a divorce, and then just recently the death of my mother, and with no one left in my family around to support, as a support system. And I'd have to say, if it weren't for my faith, I think I would just have lost it a long time ago.
Jennifer, I'm gonna leave it there because we're gonna run out of time in a minute. But obviously, Hamilton, I see in your face that you identify with Jennifer a lot.
Sure, I do. I mean, I understand how, particularly when a child is involved, how your whole sense of looking at the world just grinds down. And in my case, certainly I was very desperate to find the tools that I could use. And I wasn't sure, like I said, that looking into the past and looking back to the community and the family that reared me was going to give me what I needed, but it did. And that was a real epiphany that happened late in the writing of the book.
And Jennifer, thank you for sharing your story with us and your openness about really difficult things in your life. Jennifer's gone. Jennifer, thank you. We're almost out of time. Did you learn anything new about the South as a result of this?
Well, the South is so wonderful to write about because it's so textured. I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why it has such a great literary tradition.
What part of Tennessee are you from?
Chattanooga. And it's just lush and complicated, and you know, there's a church steeple in every corner. And you know, I will always be thinking about my Southern background and my Southern identity. It's certainly something, I've lived in New York for 22 years now, but it's something I think about pretty frequently, not necessarily every day. But so, yeah, I think I don't know if I've learned anything quite new about it, but I did find it tremendously fun to write about it.
Hamilton Caine's book is The Boy's Faith, Notes from a Southern Baptist Upbringing. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this, and good luck with you and your son.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, and Paige Cowart produced this program with Brett Stevens and Karen Camp. We had intern help today from Chris Remington and Michael McCutcheon. It's a freecountry.org editor, Caitlin Thompson, and our senior producer is Megan Ryan. That was Debbie Fountain and Leora Noam Kravitz at the audio controls, though not at the same time. Talk to you Monday. Have a great weekend. I'm Brian Lehrer.